In recent months, the United Nations has struggled to reach any agreement, any political breakthrough on Syria. Over the weekend, though, there was a rare moment of unity when the Security Council unanimously approved a resolution on access to humanitarian aid to Syria. Under this resolution, both the Syrian government and opposition forces must allow aid convoys to reach civilians inside the country. There's no threat of sanctions attached, but for the first time, Russia and China have agreed to support a UN motion on this. Australia's ambassador to the UN, Gary Quinlan, was one of the co-authors of this resolution. Ambassador, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Fran. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Gary. What will this resolution actually mean for the people of Syria, Gary?
Well, it'll mean something only if it's implemented, of course, and it's fairly strong. It's united. It has the support of all members of the Council, which is a good thing, of course, but it's only a first step. It's only the beginning. If it's not implemented, frankly, it'll mean nothing. The important thing is we've laid out some very strong measures against which we can actually measure, compliance. We've said lift the sieges, stop starvation as a weapon of war, allow cross-border access for humanitarian convoys. That should give immediate relief, if that happens straight away, to well over an additional million people. We've said stop the aerial bombardments, the barrel bombing, have local ceasefires. And we've set ourselves a month to get the first report from the Secretary-General on compliance on this. Then the Council is committed to reevaluate where we stand, but the resolution we put forward and got adopted on Saturday morning mandates action. We've actually said in the resolution, we haven't said what the action will be, but we said we will take further steps, and it's a mandatory resolution. It's binding on all member states, so it's only a start. If not implemented, goes nowhere, but let's see what happens in the next 30 days.
I want to come back to what actually will mean on the ground, but you say it mandates action. Controversially, though, the threat of sanctions was dropped from the wording of the resolution. I think it's fair to say that was the price of Russia and China's support for it. So when you say it mandates action, warns of further steps, what does that actually mean if it's not sanctions?
Well, it may well mean sanctions, but we won't know for another 30 days until we've had a first report on compliance. Then we'll have a discussion, and look, it'll be a hard discussion, be robust discussion, very hard discussion in the Council about what further action might be. It's true that in the original draft Australia, Jordan and Luxembourg had prepared, we included a reference to what's called Article 41 of the UN Charter, which lays out various sanctions that can be financial sanctions, economic sanctions, that kind of thing. Explicitly excludes military force, by the way, that part of the charter. But look, there was a price to get unified agreement, in the Council, so we dropped that. But the key was we're going to have that debate. We're going to have that debate in another 4 or 5 weeks if there's non-compliance. But
so are you expecting compliance, Ambassador, within the 30 days? And what signs are there from the Syrian representative to the UN or the representative of the opposition forces that they are prepared to play ball?
The opposition on a number of occasions has written to the Security Council committing to work very strongly with the UN and UN agencies and other humanitarian agencies in delivering assistance. There are indications on the ground that is happening in some areas, but they also need to step up a great deal more than they have to date on this. The UN system now has a sort of sanctions, not the word, but a mandate, if you like, from the Security Council to now be a lot tougher and a lot more specific in what they demand both of the Syrian government and of the opposition forces. And since this resolution is mandatory is legally binding on all member countries, all of us now, and particularly those countries which have got special influence or at least some degree of influence with both sides in the conflict, now really are obligated to help implement this resolution. So obviously the Russians have been talking to Damascus for quite some time saying, you do need to improve humanitarian performance. The Iranians will need to do more in this area. Arab countries which are working to provide assistance to the opposition clearly will be working in this direction. We're all committed to the fact the humanitarian crisis can't really be held hostage to the, the delay we've got in getting a political solution, which is, frankly, is looking dimmer and dimmer in prospect, we'd have to say, and held hostage to the fact that, we're getting a worse, military situation developing on the ground.
But is Syria committed to it? I mean, that's really the one that counts, isn't it? Has Syria indicated it will abide by this resolution?
I mean, the initial comments from the permanent representative, the ambassador to the UN the other day, were that we are doing work on the humanitarian front and we will continue to do that work. I mean, that's what you'd expect him to say. We now need to use, through the UN system itself, every effort we can to try and put direct pressure on them. Look, there will be more pressure put on the Syrian regime now. They will presumably make their own calculation about how their interests are served in abiding by this resolution. No one here is pretending this is somehow going to be a magic bullet and turn things around. That's going to be impossible. But let's see what progress we can get, and then we'll have an argument. Frankly, it will be an argument, I think, in the Council in 4 or 5 weeks' time when we have the first report on compliance, and then see, number one, what has actually happened. Are there roadblocks that the UN system and the Council can do more to unblock? And if we're not satisfied, then what action will we take? Look, I think people, we've reached a stage in this crisis. You know, this is the biggest humanitarian crisis in the world, and you've seen the statistics for what's actually happening on the ground in Syria. The whole country is disintegrated, and you have a country with a population the size of Australia, and half of them, 10 million people, are in need of urgent assistance.
And it is urgent. I mean, as you've said, there is starvation going on. So I want to ask you, as our ambassador there and a co-author of this, in a month's time, how will we know what will constitute not compliance? Is it if some aid organisations are struggling to get access? Is it waiting to find out the hard way whether these two parties, these warring parties, will agree to allow them safely through?
Yeah, I mean, there's some basic measures that are set out there. If they're continuing the sieges without allowing pauses to get access for food and medical deliveries into those besieged areas, and that's both the government and the opposition, by the way. Most of the sieges, and there's about 250,000 people locked up in besieged towns. Most of those are by the government, but a couple are actually by the opposition. That's an easy measure, whether you can say the sieges have stopped and they've allowed medical supplies, food in, and people to be evacuated. So let's measure that. Let's see what happens with the aerial bombardments and barrel bombings. Barrel bombings are monstrous beyond belief. 500,000 extra people have been made homeless in Aleppo over the last 2 months through these barrel bombs. You know, these are sort of beer barrel type things full of TNT and shrapnel, which is a scorched earth policy deliberately targeted at civilians. We can measure that kind of thing. We can see, of course, if there's been cross-border access. And above all, that was one of the key bottom lines for the three co-authors, you know, Australia, Luxembourg and Jordan. We said we would not put our draft resolution to the Council for a vote unless we had two fundamental provisions. We made a few changes, but number one was cross-border access. We were not prepared to yield on that. And secondly was a provision, a clear statement that we would take further action if there was non-compliance. But cross-border is absolutely vital. An extra 1 million people in the next few weeks could get food and medicine out of that.
Okay, Ambassador, and just finally, we've only got a minute to the news, I apologise, but on another issue, the US is sponsoring a resolution criticising Sri Lanka's human rights record, which will reportedly call for an international investigation into alleged war crimes in the dying days of the Sri Lankan Civil War. In the past, Australia has supported American resolutions on Sri Lanka. Will we support this one?
I can't give you an answer on that for two reasons. Number one, because the government hasn't seen the text of a resolution to make a judgment about, and that's not being cute. I mean, that's just the situation as I understand it. Secondly, look, human rights issues are actually handled in Geneva, and this will be discussed, of course, at the Human Rights Council in March. We don't handle them in New York, but obviously I follow it fairly closely, and the government has made clear we will make a decision on this when we've got a resolution to look at. I really can't say any more at this stage because really there isn't much more for me to say because I'm not directly responsible. I don't want to mislead you.
All right, Ambassador Gary Quinlan, thank you so much for joining us on Breakfast. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Fran, any time. Okay, bye.
Gary Quinlan is Australia's ambassador to the UN, joining us there from New York. He was co-author of that resolution, which passed the Security Council of the weekend. Quite a moment in terms of the Syria conflict, China and Russia endorsing access to aid convoys into Syria.